is how telecommunications works. We have to have a computer.
And a modem.
And we have to have a modem, and this is our modem right here.
Yep.
And it's not on, so we want to turn it on so the red lights show. Okay.
Computer specialist Joe Howard runs one of three computer labs at Hedroy School in Oakland, California. While public schools struggle just to get phones in the classroom, this elite private school is using telecommunications software and modems to connect their computers to other well-financed schools around the country and the world.
We will be set up with maybe 10 to 15 other schools in our team. They're in Asia, Russia, South America. Most of the time they're U.S. kids, but it's always kind of exciting to see who's paired up with us.
And these fourth graders do seem intrigued by the prospect of electronic pen pals.
Why is it kind of a neat thing to be able to do?
It's more organized, and you don't really have to think. You can make the computer think for you.
And it's a lot faster. It's like really complicated, so it's kind of neat to actually learn something that's really, really complicated.
Children love working with computers. It gives them something to look at, something reacts to them.
Carla Lane is a senior research associate at Far West Labs, one of 10 think tanks run by the U.S. Department of Education. She sees computers as a vehicle for transforming the entire educational system, changing the way kids learn.
They like working with it, I think, because it gives them an immediate response. I mean, they're used to the quick fix on television, let's face it.
You're actually talking to a real person?
Yeah.
Reading a book might be just not real.
Yeah,
but informative. It's informative.
The thing is, reading a book, you can just get caught up into nothing, and the computer's the real thing.
My own experience with students in schools is that they avoid reading the computer screen whenever they can figure out another way to do it.
Jane Healy is an educational psychologist who specializes in the relationship between language and brain development in children. While recognizing that basic skills such as reading need desperately to be improved, Healy questions whether computers can ever inspire children to read.
It's very much a different process than sitting with a book and staring off into space in between pages and savoring the thinking or the language or the mental images that are being created in your head while you read. That doesn't yet, at least, appear to be the same experience from reading from a computer screen.
Computers are certainly teaching kids to type earlier and faster. But the question of how and what computers can teach has refocused debate on the real issue. How do kids learn? And at what age are they able to grasp abstract concepts?
Being able to work on computer also helps them think more abstractly. Because they've got so much more information and they're not completely tied down to what's going on in a classroom right that moment, they begin to put together whole concepts, whole ideas.
My concern about computers, especially with younger children, is that it's very much, at this point, a two-dimensional medium. There is a wonderful story of a little boy who came home from kindergarten, and when his dad asked him what he had learned that day, he said, "Daddy, I learned that 3 + 4 = 7. What is 7? And the way children learn about 7 is, first of all, from 7 objects in the real world.
Just how different is the experience of manipulating real objects or moving them about on a computer screen?
We know for sure, in terms of the early brain development of children, that a lot is gained from touching and feeling and interacting directly with three-dimensional objects.
What you need to have out right now is a pair of scissors. That's all you should have is a pair of scissors.
The project the kids are working on at Head Royce gives them the opportunity to learn with the computer and through direct experience. It's a KidsNet program called What Are We Eating? The class learns about regional foods and then compares this information with more than 200 other schools that are linked to the network. To come up with the data they're going to telecommunicate, these kids interview their parents and record family recipes. And back in their regular classroom, they're working in small groups, learning to categorize.
So everybody's going to get a magazine, and I want you to cut out at least 10 foods. And as you do that, I want you to talk among your group, and I want you to write down what different ways you can divide these foods. So you decide the different ways.
Here's some cheddar baked potato slices.
What do you think we should divide them by?
Why don't we have a vote?
Yeah, let's have a vote.
Okay, who wants to do it in like iron, calcium, and protein? Nobody. Okay.
Who's for colors?
Colors.
We should do them by colors.
Colors.
But, like, what if there's something like this, Sean? What color is this?
Let's do, like, the color of the main ingredient.
In this traditional setting, these kids were learning classification, problem solving, and group process. But the modem and computer provides them with the opportunity to work with students beyond their schoolroom and community.
All right, look what's happening. We're having a start of communications. It's dialing a number that I preset. This part takes a while. You just have to kind of sit still and watch.
Mrs. Howard is trying to find out who their teammates are going to be.
Oh, my God.
Okay, it's trying again. Don't touch anything on the computer screen. Well, now, here comes our welcome letter. Let's leave it alone. So,
wow, yeah.
I know. You'll need to stand up in the back. And that's going to have all our teams on it. And here's a list of all our schools.
Gosh,
here we are. We have one in Gibraltar.
Yes!
Where is Gibraltar?
It's in Europe.
It's in Europe. It's the gateway to the Mediterranean. How about VT? What's that stand for?
Vermont.
Uh-huh.
Kentucky.
And KY is Kentucky.
When we just talked to them about, well, this is Arizona, and that's New York, and that's Great Britain, there's no way of visualizing anybody there or anything that's going on. But when they've got another child that they can communicate with, they really get a sense of place. So it's real world, it's really happening, and the kids are able to connect.
I wonder what they're eating in Gibraltar. I really want to know that.
All right, let's print it.
Although the kids were thrilled by the idea of talking to students in Gibraltar, a lot of time in the computer room was actually spent watching and waiting, or following a stream of instructions, such as on how to use this computer map.
Do you see any countries you recognize here?
Yeah.
What do you recognize? That's Africa.
Spain right here.
Here is Spain, and here's Gibraltar, and this is the Mediterranean Sea. So now you click on the schoolhouse. Go click over here. Click. All right, now watch up in the corner. Watch as I move the mouse.
One thing that happens with a computer program is that invariably the guidance for the learning comes very much from the computer programmer. And we certainly are trying to teach children to be internally motivated and to invent problems and questions of their own. But if the problem is always being suggested by somebody who wrote the computer program, again, I'm not certain that we're getting the same result.
The one thing all the experts agree on is that computers cannot be used in a vacuum.
No one medium does it all. And the best possible learning experience would involve all of these things, telecommunications and simulations on computers and videotape and a book and hands-on experiences and manipulatives. It would have all of it. And you still need a teacher who acts as the resource guide and the companion and the leader throughout the educational process.
I can't believe we have one from Gibraltar.
Okay, out you go. Recess time.
I'm Claire Schoen for the Communications Revolution.